And animal studies, as has been multiple times mentioned now, have paved the way for this research, and they still are so important for circadian research, and therefore I'm really happy to have Isabella Ellinger here. She's Associate Professor of Cell Biology in the Institute for Pathophysiology, Infectiology and Immunology at the MedUni Wien. And she's doing interesting work in collaboration with Lubos Molcan and Professor Michael Zeman, who himself is an expert in circadian research from Comenius University in Bratislava. And she will share some of her findings that show so nicely how you can do applied research in animal research using the circadian principles. Thank you, Isabella.
Thank you very much for the introduction. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. It's my pleasure to be here. As Eva mentioned, I'm a cell biologist, and I'm mainly interested in the function of the placenta. And because of that, I got recently involved in a collaborative project with Associate Professor Lubos Molcan at the Comenius University, and he is very much interested to figure out what is the reason that a prenatal hypoxia causes hypertension. And I had to get into this project. Unfortunately, I cannot present my own results, but I read a lot about this topic. And tonight, I want to present a short summary on the effects of prenatal hypoxia on the cardiovascular system of the offspring, also considering circadian aspects here, and would also like to introduce a little bit the animal models that can be used to study the mechanistic background and the difficulties that we face with these animal models. So you probably all are aware that cardiovascular diseases, that are diseases affecting heart and blood vessels, are a major reason of death worldwide. They cause approximately 30% of the deaths, and in Europe even more. And one major risk factor for cardiovascular diseases is hypertension. It's the most important risk factor, actually. It causes about 30% of the cardiovascular disease death. And meanwhile, we know that the most important risk factors for hypertension are caused by genetic components, also by behavioral risk factors that we can influence ourselves. So this is alcohol, of course, smoking, unhealthy diet, making sport, for instance, but in addition, I would like to point out there is also an origin in the prenatal period that can cause hypertension, and this is caused by so-called fetal programming. Now, what is fetal programming? That means that we have an insult during the developmental period, and this insult leads to an adaptation of the fetal organs of the fetal physiology that helps the fetus to cope with this insult during the time in the womb, but it changes organs and tissue, and it can lead to an increased risk of developing chronic disease later on in life. Now, one of these insults that can occur during pregnancy is prenatal hypoxia. This is a quite common pregnancy complication. It is estimated that about 0.5 to more than 2% of the fetus suffers from fetal hypoxia. But this hypoxia can be caused by different reasons, so it's quite heterogeneous. We can have a preplacental hypoxia, that means mother and fetus are affected. This can be caused, for instance, in pregnancies occurring at high altitude. We can have uteroplacental hypoxia that only affects the fetus, and this is caused by diseases affecting the placenta, like preeclampsia, for instance. And there's also some pregnancies where we have postplacental hypoxia because the fetus suffers from diseases like heart failure. The consequences for the fetus have been described as an increased risk for intrauterine death, as an increase in the 30-day mortality. Often, but not always, we observe fetal growth restriction. There are also adverse neurological outcomes, but in many cases, there is hypertension that we observe in the offsprings at their adult age and other cardiovascular diseases. So to study the reason and the molecular mechanisms that cause this hypertension, researchers mainly use animal models. And among the most important animal models are mice, rats, and guinea pigs, so small rodents. Also, the sheep are used because their heart is, the fetal heart is of similar size as the human fetal heart, and so there's good comparison, but they have a long gestational period, and in addition, chicken are used to investigate the effects of prenatal hypoxia. But the rodents are the most common system that are used here. The advantages are, of course, that they have a short lifespan, so we can easily study one more than one generation in a good time. We can collect all tissues that are of interest, samples from the mother, from the placenta, and from the fetus. Of course, we can use knockout animals, knockout mice, to study the impact of specific genes. But we should not forget that they have also certain disadvantages. So there are differences in the anatomy and physiology concerning the placenta, but also, for instance, rats and mice are so-called altricial animals. That means that some of their organs only fully develop after birth, which is in contrast to precocial organisms like the human or also the sheep, for instance, or the guinea pig, where all organs are fully developed. So you cannot use rats and mice very good to study neurological impact of pregnancy, prenatal hypoxia. Also, the way hypoxia can be induced in these animals can be quite different. So we can use environmental oxygen tensions, reduction of the oxygen tensions. That means you put the animal in a cage where you reduce the oxygen, which is, of course, also more easy if you have small animals. You can use surgical procedures. You can use pharmacological strategies or transgenic animals. So you see there's quite a heterogeneity of the method you can apply, of the animals you can use. And all this together has caused quite a heterogeneity in the results also in this area. Now, how does the fetus adapt to hypoxia? What has been found out in the recent years? So there is a carotid chemoreflex, autonomic nervous system reaction. We have the release of various factors in the fetus, but also from the placenta, like nitric oxide or catecholamines. And all these factors and reactions together have, or should, lead to bradycardia and peripheral vasoconstriction with the aim to support the fetus to decrease oxygen consumption, increase oxygen extraction, and make the best use of the available oxygen. Yeah? In addition, there's also something that is called fetal brain sparing. That means there's an increase in the carotid blood flow to provide the important fetal brain with oxygen and also glucose, while the femoral arteries are rather decreased in the blood supply. This is of advantages for the fetus as long as it is in the womb, but can turn out to have negative consequences later on when these organs and tissue adapt to this mechanism. And this means that it was observed that there is endothelial dysfunction in the offspring's cardiac wall remodeling, for instance, cardiac sympathetic dominance in adult offsprings, and the development of hypertension. Yeah? But as I already mentioned, there is a lot of controversial data also in the literature. And I think what needs to be considered are several factors, and this we should also consider in our future studies. This means that we should consider the duration of the prenatal hypoxia and the stage of development when the low oxygen tension is applied. Then it's also very important to consider the fetal sex, because it has been realized that male offsprings are much more affected than female offsprings to suffer from hypertension. And this links us now to this evening, it is also the circadian clock that seems to have an influence here. Why? And for this, we have to consider two major transcription factors that work here. One is so-called HIF transcription factors, hypoxia-inducible factor, that is upregulated due to hypoxia in many tissues and cells. Yeah? This upregulation of the HIF transcription factor is mainly because one part of this heterodimeric transcription factor is usually degraded when the oxygen tension is normal, is high, but is stabilized when oxygen starts to be lowered. And then there is the association of these two transcription factors, and the heterodimeric complex binds to specific DNA sequences of genes that are the HIF target genes, and then many, many genes are transcribed in the nucleus that are important to cope with hypoxia. Among these are glycolytic enzymes, for instance, or molecules necessary to induce vasculogenesis. So this is the HIF transcription factor that is also upregulated during prenatal hypoxia in many tissues and causes and is related to the chemo reflex, to the sympathetic drive, and so on and so forth. On the other hand, please keep in mind that there is also our molecular clock, and we have a master transcription factor here. It's also a heterodimer that is composed of two proteins. This is BMAL1 and CLOCK. So this is also a heterodimer, we can see it here, that when it builds up this heterodimer, it binds to specific gene sequences of the so-called CLOCK controlled genes, and then transcribes these genes. At the same time, there are more CLOCK genes made, for instance, cryptochrome and period, and this then form a complex that is a repressor complex for this master transcription regulator. Now, in recent years, there is more and more evidence that these two very important transcription factors can interact and influence each other. So, for instance, the subunits of these heterodimers, they can interact with each other. So CLOCK can interact with part of the HIF transcription factors. Also, HIF1 alpha can interact with BMAL1, one of the subunits of the CLOCK transcription factors. Then the additional CLOCK genes like period or cryptochrome, they can impact, they can bind to HIF1 alpha subunit and can either enhance the hypoxic response or dampen the hypoxic response. Furthermore, the CLOCK major transcription factor, CLOCK BMAL1, controls obviously also the expression of HIF1 alpha, part of the HIF transcription factor. And when HIF transcription factor is active, then there are many enzymes transcribed that are required for glycolysis. And during glycolysis, there is also acidification of the cells. And this acidification interferes with the CLOCK transcription factor functions. So on multiple levels here, we have an interference between these systems. And this now has also been taken under consideration when we investigate the effect of prenatal hypoxia. Prenatal hypoxia, due to the oxygen lack, induces the transcription factor HIF, which then causes many of the factors to be released that impact on the blood flow, on the peripheral system, and the reduction of oxygen consumption. But what we have learned from recent years' investigation, there is obviously an interaction with the CLOCK genes and with the transcription factors necessary here, so they can mutually impact each other. And it can be assumed that prenatal hypoxia acting during different times of the day may affect the regulatory mechanisms of the cardiovascular system to different aspects. So in summary, understanding the mechanisms leading to hypertension as a consequence of prenatal hypoxia means that we have to select the appropriate animal models, select appropriate time points and duration of hypoxia that may hopefully represent the human disease, consider sex differences, and also consider mutual interaction of the clock genes and the hypoxia-inducible factors. And with this, I would like to thank you all for your listening, and I would like to thank Professor Schierenhammer for inviting me and also tonight and being part of her biological treatments well-being lab. Thank you very much.